Hey, my friends, welcome back to Wanna Be Clutter Free. I'm Deanna Yates, and you are listening to episode 319. On today's episode, I'm talking with Monica Packer. She's the host of the top-rated About Progress podcast. It's celebrating 10 years and millions of downloads this fall. She is a certified habits and identity coach. She's a recovering perfectionist. She's a mom of five. And her new book, Sticky Habits, A Woman's Guide to Reclaim Happiness, Ditch Perfectionism, and Create Habits That Last, is coming out this September. So I know you're going to want to pick it up. This conversation is amazing. You can pre-order it right now at stickyhabitsbook.com and grab her bonuses while you are there, because this is obviously coming out before September. I will have links in the show notes as well if you can't stop and write that down. So no problem. Just click on through. This conversation went so many places that I did not expect. She gets vulnerable in the first few minutes about her own perfectionism story, including her recovery from some eating disorders. So just a gentle heads up, if that's something that you need to come back to later, or save this for solo listening, if you're listening to this with your family. We don't go very deep on it, but I just wanted you to be aware. But what unfolds after that is amazing. She breaks down why your morning routine only lasted a week. It has nothing to do with willpower. She buries the myth of consistency in a way that I think is going to set a lot of you free. We talk about actual research on invisible labor and why almost every habit book that you've ever read was tested on a life that looks probably nothing like yours. And then she gives us the four S's of sticky habits, plus a formula called WTA that I'm already trying out this week. So if this is your first time here, please hit follow so you don't miss what's coming. Come hang out with me over on Instagram. I'm Wannabe Clutter Free, and you can find the show notes and every link Monica mentions at wannabeclutterfree.com/319. All right, grab your coffee. Let's get into it. Well, hey, Monica, welcome to Wannabe Clutter Free. How you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Very happy to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you. I am really excited about jumping into this conversation. But before we do that, can you tell listeners who you are and a little bit about what you do?
Sure. So hi, I'm Monica, for those listening. Most people know me professionally as a podcaster. I have been podcasting at About Progress now for 10 years this coming fall, which is so insane to say. Yeah, it's been such a wonderful journey. But personally, I'm a mom of five, just doing normal mom things most of the time. I've got a 3-hour block in the weekday mornings I have to work, and then the rest is mom lifing. So that's me in a very small nutshell.
Love it. Well, congrats on 10 years. That's such an amazing milestone. That's amazing.
It is. And like every year, I'm like, am I going to make it to the next? And then the next, I'm like, of course I am. And then I'm like, am I going to make it to the next? And then I'm like, of course I am. So we'll see. We'll just keep playing year by year.
That. What made you start About Progress? Tell us a little bit about that. I'm curious.
Well, it's weirdly tied to what we're going to be talking about today, which is perfectionism.
Perfect.
In my own pursuit of figuring out that A, I was a perfectionist, and B, I didn't want to be anymore. Do you mind if I share a little bit more of that story, Deanna?
Please do.
Yeah. So I think a lot of us think of perfectionists as this ideal quality, like a kind of person or persona that we wish to be, to aspire to be. And I was one of those people for the first 20 years of my life. I was an aspiring perfectionist. And because of that, I met the stereotype well. I was that overachieving type A, like doing everything very regimented, everything block hour, check marks galore, but really succeeding well, especially in college. That's where everything kind of peaked for me. Straight A student almost in college. Like my worst grade was a B+ in some random class that I'm still mad about. But on the inside, I was paying some pretty heavy prices for my perfectionism, and it all built up for me to be multiple eating disorders and a lot of mental health issues. And in many ways, it almost claimed my life. And because of that, I entered recovery and, tried to work really hard on that. I did it privately because I was ashamed of the types of eating disorders I had. I was basically a failed anorexic, is how I felt about it. And then I went into another version of perfectionism that I didn't know was one. And that's the underachieving perfectionist. For my roles and my responsibilities as first a middle school teacher and then as a stay-at-home mom that I was for a few years before I started About Progress, I could show up for those responsibilities. I could do what needed to be done. But for myself, everything was on the sidelines, from hobbies to goals to self-care. I was just too scared. I thought the only way to change and to grow and to progress in life was to do all of the all or nothing cycle. So I stayed safe in the nothing. But then when I was approaching my 30th birthday, I reached another low point in my life where I was similarly very depressed and struggling with mental health issues. Eating disorders were better, still needing some work, but that wasn't my main issue. And I got a great therapist who pointed out to me that I was a perfectionist. I basically laughed in her face because I was like, no, I used to be a good perfectionist. And now I do nothing. I do nothing. And she helped me see that that is still perfectionism. And I'll just do a little teaching here. Mm. Perfectionism is a coping mechanism. For some, it can be for trauma. For most of us, it's about being human. It starts out with good intentions, just wanting to be good, which is how it began for me as a small girl, just desiring to do better, be better. I've always had that personality of wanting to grow and develop and to learn and change in a positive way. But, you know, when you think the only way to change is to hustle, to grind, to have like perfect discipline, consistency, then you pay a price for it. And that's a price I paid. And really, at the root, perfectionism is a misplacement of identity. And that's what I'd gotten lost in. I'd got lost in my achievements, and I got lost in my lack of achievements. We pay a price for perfectionism, regardless of where you are on the spectrum. And I paid it on both sides and everywhere in between. Because I was so misplaced in who I was, I was either driving myself too hard in ways that I almost lost my life to, and then too scared to try in ways that I also lost my life to in other ways because I wasn't actually living a life. So that's what began my work with About Progress, was more of a personal experiment to find a new way to grow outside of my perfectionistic cycle of all or nothing, to do something instead of all, instead of nothing. And it was more about myself. It was more about recovering my identity and getting a new foundation in who the real core of me is and rediscovering that worth. And then it gradually led to other things, other ways that we can grow and develop, including habits. And the podcast came along for the ride, actually. It was another thing. I was already in this like place of like, it's okay to fail. It's okay to do things like to be in the messy middle. It's okay to learn and not do and to just do things for the worth of doing them. And suddenly a podcast was part of the deal. And that's the thing that's really stuck.
Wow. Well, this is going to take us for a ride. Mm-hmm. Sadly, was not really expecting. I had all these ideas about habits and things we were going to talk about today. And wow, I mean, your story just actually kind of struck a chord. I was just listening to it being like, oh gosh, I feel a lot of myself in what you were saying. I haven't struggled in the same areas necessarily, but also just hearing the all or nothing cycle. Mm-hmm. Just kind of struck something with me. So, oh gosh, tell me a little bit more about that. Like, why is that a thing? How does perfectionism show up in that?
I think in many ways, again, if we're going back to these roots, we're desiring for things to change, to be better, for us to be good, right? So there's those worthy goals and pursuits and desires of our hearts. But how it gets twisted, I think, is mostly because of the self-help and wellness industry that we've been living in without even realizing we're living in it. You know, we have a culture that glorifies overnight success, that really aggrandizes hustling. We also live in an industry with the self-help and wellness industry that is really masculine driven. And in ways that we will talk about that can translate to anything, including habits. But we lose sense of what progress actually looks like, that it's really small wins building over time, that it's messy, that there's failure, there's disappointment, there's frustration, there's pivoting. We don't often see it. We're not modeled it. We're only shown the outcome. And we're also given these pathways of getting to those outcomes that are so extreme that we grow to believe that that is what it looks like to change. When in reality, the people who change in the most sustainable and deep ways know everything else that I just shared about progress. It's small. It's messy. It's humbling. It's topsy-turvy. It's not this like graph from bottom left corner to top right corner in a straight line.
It's
a roller coaster, and it's a curvy one. So how? I mean, for everyone, it's going to be different how they get sucked into it. But I think we can all go back to there's something we want to do well in, or we want to be seen as good. We want to be noticed. Maybe that's due to our family of origin, want to be approved. We want to be valued. And we think the way to do that, because it's modeled so much to us and taught even directly to us, is that all or nothing way. And so we fall into it. In many ways, we do get the outcomes. Like we do have those markers of success, and it kind of builds this reinforcement loop in our brain that we think this is the way. And then we keep following it until the prices are too steep, or the prices are just our being able to sustain it, you know, or we get what we want and we find those things don't stick around for good. Which is one of the worst parts about being an overachieving perfectionist, is you are chasing the next thing after the next, because nothing stays. And somehow we get caught back in still that loop that who we are is what our outcomes are. And that kind of still reinforces that whole cycle that in order to be somebody, we have to do these things. We have to be this kind of person. We have to meet these metrics. We have to fulfill these prescriptions, instead of listening to ourselves and making our own prescriptions and growing in slow and messy and even sometimes turbulent ways.
Yeah. Oh, it's so beautiful how you're putting all of this. I think it's very fascinating. As a mom of five, have you seen, I would just be curious, I know this isn't your degree or anything necessarily, but do you see a lot of tendencies showing up in your kids that you think are more genetically put there or that are more nurturing put there?
I mean, isn't this the question of all of us? Is it nature? Mm-hmm. Is it nurture?
Yeah.
I think really in the heart of us, we all have roots, you know, or mm-hmm. seeds, maybe we should say seeds of things that can be nourished in ways that help or in ways that hurt us. And like I said, I've always had that kind of ambitious side of me that just, I always want, I don't understand. I have a hard time understanding people who have a problem and aren't willing to learn more, to try something different, or to get more help. But that's always just been my personality. Like, why not just fix it, you know, mm-hmm. or why not try? And yet I can come in the loops too of being stuck in certain categories of my life and similarly just staying there too. So I understand it to some degree. But nature versus nurture, I think it really just comes down to the seeds. I've seen this in other ways with of my kids. I've got several neurodivergent children, and you know, there's parts of it that they were just who they were from day one. And there's parts of it that we've had to learn how to help and advocate for and nourish. And then there's other parts of us that we're trying to help reshape in another way. I've got one kiddo who I can see is a little more perfectionistic. Mm-hmm. In ways that can be damaging if I'm always just, and he's my easiest child. My parents said I was too.
I
was their easiest kid. Yep. That's the kid I'm actually the most worried about. Mm. And I've got kids who there's a lot to worry about, you know, with different special needs that they have. I worry the most in the bigger picture because I know the perfectionistic seeds, those roots grow the sneakiest and the quietest. They're the ones that also go so deep before you even know they're there. They're like some of these weeds I've been pulling out in my yard that you pull it out and you think you get it, but there's actually like 6 feet worth of a root underneath that you can never get to because you're just thinking you're pulling it out. And I don't say that to make anyone to despair, but to say like, if you're noticing this in yourself or in your kids or in other family members, to remember like some of this is just who we are. And awareness really is the half the battle for working on these roots ourselves and also helping our kids work through them. You know, it's just involving a lot of transparent conversations with this kiddo of mine to be like, I noticed this or I noticed that in a way that I'm, you know, I wanted you to know that this is actually how it looks to change. And it's okay if you're not, you know, always easy, or if you're, it's okay to have a hard day. It's okay to get a bad grade. Like, it's okay to be frustrated and, you know, just to have those kind of conversations, but more than anything, to model it myself, which I think a lot of it comes back to. So I know you weren't intending for me to, you know, go down a parenting route there, but
hey,
I'll help answer that question. Okay.
I was the one that asked, so I'm all about it. Yeah. Well, and I have the easy child, right? She was spirited as a baby, though. Mm-hmm. Man, did she give me a run for my money when she was little. But now she's the easy. She's really easy. And I do worry about that. I worry about the weight she puts on her own shoulders that doesn't need to be there. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. she's nothing that's happening right now needs to be permanent. And I, yeah, so, oof. Anyway, that's why I wanted to ask. Yeah.
You know me, less clutter, more calm. And in our house, that goes for screens too, which is why summer makes me just a little bit nervous. The kids are home, a device is always within reach, and there's this thing called the summer slide, where the math and reading they've built up all year quietly starts to slip. So here's the one app I actually feel good handing my kiddo. It's called Gritty Kids. It comes from a best-selling logic workbook series and is a whole farm of puzzles. There's math, word games, logic, focus, and spatial reasoning. No ads, no timers, no streaks pulling them back in. It's about as close to pen and paper as screens get. And the thing is, kids love it. It keeps their brains sharp over break, and it's screen time that I don't feel guilty about. Find it at grittykids.com/clutterfree and use the code clutterfree for 30% off just for podcast listeners. grittykids.com/clutterfree.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could talk about that. And, you know, oftentimes I think people are like, well, what did your parents do wrong because of how like severely it affected my life for so long? But honestly, I think it was just the water I was swimming in as a woman on this earth. That's really it. Yeah. And actually, that's one more thing I'll say about this. Like you asked about originally, like, how do we get into these all or nothing cycles? This industry and the world and the culture at large, like everything about it, people love to preach with certainty. They love to sell certainty. And we as consumers and as recipients to these lessons soak it up like a sponge. We love the black and white answers. We love the give me the A to Z plan.
Yeah, hack.
Give me everything that will give me the certainty of the outcomes I want, yeah, as well as the ease of getting there. And that's not reality. It's just not reality.
Yeah. Good point.
It's kind of harder to sell, to be honest. Like, well, it's sure, not as sexy to sell, but
can't really sell. It's hard to sell doubt or uncertainty. Yeah, exactly.
Join me for change that takes time and will be small and messy, but
and
it
we
will
won't
be
really
sustainable.
Know if it works.
Yeah,
for
but
you,
it will
this
be
way.
Sustainable with time and a lot of twists and turns. So yeah. I get it.
And once the roots do stick, though, then it actually does stick for you. I think that's the flip side of that coin, right? Is if somebody tells you that this works certainly, and maybe it did work for them, but it might not work for you, then you also, if you bought into this idea that this is absolutely what I need to do and how it's going to work, when it doesn't work for you, I think that hole gets dug even deeper for ourselves, right? Then we feel worse. Yeah.
Well, one more thing to say on this, Deanna, and this again is part of like, how do these loops get so entrenched in our brain? Like they're reinforced, right? They're reinforced with good outcomes. They are also reinforced with the outcomes we don't want. And it all comes back down to how we see ourselves. And speaking to habits specifically more, like a lot of us fail at our habits. And what do we blame? We blame a person and it's ourselves. That's what we blame.
Yes. I pointed to myself over here for those watching this on video.
And not only do we blame it, we reinforce these ways that we see ourselves as someone who doesn't have follow through. Maybe it's with just a particular habit, or maybe it's like a blanket of all habits or things that we're trying to work on. We immediately tell these stories and create these identities about who we think we are. And that's a big part of why this sticks and goes so far. I mean, one of the things I'm going back to the weeds, right? I've learned that if you have to help these weeds really go anywhere, because I'm working hard on some of these weeds that just love to grow where we are and are really like that 6 feet long root. I've learned that you have to have a really healthy soil to combat the weeds, because they grow best in soil that's not super quality. And you have to have other plants that crowd them out. So if we are going to change our patterns of thinking and our patterns of behavior, including habit, we have to talk to ourselves in a different way that's part of the soil. We have to replace that shame-driven voice that perfectionism thrives on with a compassionate, nurturing voice, not because we are apathetic and are just resigning ourselves to the status quo, but because we're willing to persist in a different way, one that's both more objective, meaning truth, like truth-telling, but compassionate, giving us grace. That gives us the soil. And then the other things we do to crowd out those weeds of perfectionism is we give it new plants to thrive on. We give it new examples of ways that we can change and grow and develop that are different than these old patterns, that challenge those old patterns, that crowd them out over time. So those old roots have nowhere to grow because there's good soil and other plants in its place. And again, it goes back to a lot of time and effort. And mistakes and failures and disappointments too. That's all part of creating a new garden for ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, this garden analogy is so strong because it makes so much sense. And then gardens don't grow overnight. They don't thrive overnight, right? They take nurturing and watering and attention and purpose. And that's a great analogy. I love it. Yeah. Very cool.
Well, it's top of mind for me. I've probably been That's what saved me this past month is working in my garden. So yeah,
nice.
Top of mind.
Very nice. Okay. Well, I do want us to get to these habits because that I did have all these questions lined up for this and I was really excited about them.
There's a lot of crossover. We've actually been talking about it without talking about it.
It's true. It's true. So you talk about what you call the hidden habit saboteur. Mm-hmm. It's a very sexy name. And so you call it the number one reason that self-care feels like a luxury that we can't afford. And I did want to talk about this because I do feel like so many moms put themselves in the back burner. We feel like, if we put ourselves first, it's very selfish. And a lot of moms don't do that. So let's talk about this. How do we start to recognize this in our own lives? If we're like, I'm not that person, maybe we are, or maybe we're not, but how can we start to recognize it?
Well, as I told you, my perfectionism really amounted basically to me not being on my own list in multiple ways. Like my perfectionism was holding me back because I was waiting for the right time, meaning I was waiting for things to be easier in my life and circumstances. Guess what? They've never gotten easier. I was waiting for more opportunity. I was waiting for more money. I was waiting for more energy. I was waiting for more skill sets. And I just kept waiting. And that made me a very depressed person and not showing up as I wanted to be and who I can really be as a mom, who I really am actually. And self-care is part of that. I mean, I talked about the self-development and wellness industry. There's crossover with self-care. Like oftentimes we think self-care is this bougie kind where it's money, it's energy, it's time, and it's more indulgent and luxurious. And, you know, if we're already far down on our list, if not on the list altogether, then those are things we literally can't make time for or afford. So to help with this, there's two things. First, we have to understand that self-care is really about the basic ways that we care for ourselves. If we're going back to the main structure of that word self-care, we're taking care of ourselves. And the number one way we do that is through basic forms of self-care. In other words, habits. It's feeding ourselves. It's movement. It's spiritual soul care. It's connection with others. It's rest as a form of habit too. It's hobbies. You know, these are the ways that we actually take care of ourselves. And in many ways, that's like more practical than we think and maybe a little bit more boring, but so necessary because if we don't have deep self-care going on, the indulgent forms, which are fun, by the way, we're not judging them. I'm going to Riverdance this Saturday with my moms and sisters. Ooh, like that's my indulgent self-care. Mm-hmm. Like they're so fun. I look forward, you know, we should look forward to them. We should incorporate them. But if that's the only form of self-care, then it's like putting a Band-Aid on a gaping open wound. And this is what self-care does. True self-care. When we're caring for ourselves, we're taking care of these basic needs that we have. And I would say one other level in between that and indulgent is deep self-care. And that's where we have things like therapy, or we have things like, it could look like a habit like meditation, more of that spiritual care. It could look like friendships. It can look like, for me, hobbies is my number one way to get into deep self-care because it helps me have real time in my own interests that help me feel like me. It's more about that fulfillment piece. And then we can have those occasional indulgent forms, and they're just the cherry on the sundae because we've already built up this foundation of care. So we got to redefine self-care. And then I'm going to tell you one, the real habit saboteur, okay, to self-care.
Okay.
Okay. It's one word that, well, it's a term more that you've probably heard, but maybe not understood, or maybe you've heard part of it. And it's invisible labor. And this is particularly true for women. Okay. Invisible labor is the physical, mental, and emotional labor required to run households, communities, and institutions, including your workspaces. Because who plans to work parties and restocks the forks and brings the cakes and stuff like that? This work is necessary. It's valuable in terms of what it does. But because as a world at large, we don't often see or value it, we don't understand just how intensive it truly is and what cost it requires. In America alone in 2019, they did several studies with the World Health Organization or the UN for Women. Excuse me, I said the first word wrong. UN for Women organization and the New York Times both came up with a number on what it would cost if we were to quantify invisible labor. And in America alone, it would be a $10.7 trillion a year industry. Trillion. Guess what number they base that on, though? $7.25 an hour. So well, even their valuation of the work is undervalued.
Wow.
Okay, so invisible labor is the high majority of it is carried by women.
Mm-hmm.
High majority. In America alone, women spend 4 hours of work on house management a day, and men spend two a day.
Wow.
And that is true. That's the average. That is true for women who have kids or don't, or who have kids in the home or don't, or who work outside of the home or don't. That's the average. Okay. In India, it's 6 to 1. So in many ways, there's parts of the world that have better than others. But regardless, this means we as women have literally, we have less time. This is research back. This is not anecdotal. This isn't just me pulling out a hat. We have less time than men do. We're doing more with that less time. So that also means we have less energy. We also have far more interruptions because our tasks are far more urgency bound because they're typically attached to a human on the other end of it somehow, some way. Even if it's down to restocking toilet paper, someone needs it.
Or I don't want to be on a toilet without toilet paper.
That's right. And I mean, the list is pretty endless there. But so we have less time, we have less energy, we have more interruptions, we have less predictability. And yet, all the ways that we're taught habits, including self-care, is based off of what is designed to be a gender-neutral model of habit formation, but really all of these methods are designed and taught by men. If you think of all the best-selling books on habit formation, you know, it's predominantly men. It's a very high percentage of the productivity self-help books are written by men. It's like, I think it's somewhere between 70 to 90% and ranges on the year that they come out. But even within these books, I think they're done with good intentions. It's not like they're out. They just truly don't understand that women's lives are different from men's lives because they're living a different reality than we are. It's done with, again, with good intentions, but most of their books are written as gender neutral, like an actress, a business person apply this person. They never say the gender, or when they do, the case studies are significantly more men than women in their case studies. The research and applying their methods are not done with women. And if they are, they're not controlled, like they're not put into different groups to see like, well, do they perform differently based off of gender there? So this is all to say, and I know I've talked quite a lot and I'm going to, you know, wrap this up in just a moment, but there's a lot we're doing about caring for ourselves where it's like we are working on something with not only our hands tied behind our back, but our feet too. Like there's so much here that we don't even see. And it's because oftentimes invisible labor is invisible to even us. Most of it is internal. Two-thirds of the work of invisible labor is actually the mental load piece of it, which is why we can not see it ourselves. It's like the water we're living in too, in terms of our day-to-day lives. Like we don't even fully comprehend just how much we're carrying around, how much we're doing, where our energy is going, how much we're interrupting, because it's our reality. But for women, this means one, we're going to redefine what self-care is, right? We're going to make it like this is actually about caring for myself in these basic forms. I'm going to revalue what basic habits are for me. And also I'm going to understand that I must do habits differently, including caring for myself, because my reality is different than what is being taught to us. It's the methods that are failing women. Women are not failing at these habits.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so how do we start to, I mean, it feels a little scary, right, to go there to say like, okay, I understand something's wrong. How do I start to fix it without getting, I mean, maybe we should get angry, but I want to get angry at society. I don't get angry at my husband. It's not his fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do I start to have this conversation without making it feel like I'm attacking or it's someone else's, it's someone's fault, but it's not their fault either. They're also part of this problem.
And they don't see it either. They don't, it's not, I mean, so much of this is the lives we are living without fully seeing or understanding. It's one of the many conundrums of life where it's like, well, maybe we should just end this interview and just all be mad. Like, where's our pitchforks?
We're not doing that.
Where's my torch? Like, where's my pitchfork? Like, let's go get them. But really, like, let's go get them. Like, it's the people we live with who don't know it either. They don't understand. Right. We may need to do a whole separate episode on that alone, but I will just say, like, read Fair Play. It's a great book by Eve Rotsky. She endorsed my book, which I'm so thrilled with.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But let's start with one by validating. So this is what I want women to understand, not so we become men haters. Okay. Like, a lot of us have, I would say the majority of us have willing and able partners who will do anything we ask, but they're missing out on the 2/3 of the tasks that we're doing internally to direct them to do it. And that can come with time. Homes, systems, and systems at large, like by society, they do need to shift, but it takes time. And women need help now.
Right.
So what we start with is we take back our caring for ourselves. We put that care on our back on our list. Okay. And we do that in a different way than we've been taught.
Okay.
Okay. And that's where we can insert our control, right? Like, we have to control the controllables, what we actually can control. And we start there while we're working on the bigger changes, starting within our own homes, about better sharing this labor as a whole household, not just with our spouses, with our kids or our housemates or whoever, you know, we live with. So let's talk about it habits specifically, because I want women to understand so they're validated and they know what they're working with, not so that they despair and quit and die. Yeah. Like, that's not what we're going after. We're going after, you are literally running the world. Mm-hmm. You literally are running the world. If invisible labor stopped, the entire GDP, that's a gross domestic product across the entire earth, would stop in its tracks. And we know that because it happened in Iceland. When people, Icelandic women, went on a protest one day, I think it was 1979, I know it was in the late 70s, where they said, we're all not working today. And that includes at home. We're not watching the kids. We're not washing the floors. We're not making the meals. We're not doing the laundry. We're also not manning your planes. We're not being your flight attendants. We're not being your secretaries. We are not doing anything until we get better equal pay. And what I love about this is that they included all the invisible labor too. Like, women who are not getting paid but working just as hard every day at home. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what happened? Everything went to a screeching halt. Screeching halt. Like, men were bringing their kids to work. All the sausage buns got sold out at the street vendors because they had no food anywhere and they're trying to feed their kids. Like, nothing was running. No airplanes were flying. Like, it was a total catastrophe. Like, the actual economy stopped that day.
Wow.
Okay.
How do we do this?
And a law passed.
Can we do this?
I can actually. I think some people have tried to repeat it. But the thing is, like, everybody's got to be all in, right? Like, every woman of every, like, every branch of what she's working on. So anyway, I'm just trying to say, we're going to validate this work matters.
Yeah.
It deserves to be better seen. It deserves to be better valued. And by extension, you deserve to get better seen and better valued. And again, we can't wait for that day. We have to start with ourselves, and we also have to start by ensuring that we are on our own list first. So we can do that through habits specifically. And maybe we can start that by illustrating how pervasive the ways that we've been taught habits in this masculine way, like, absent of our lived realities, like, absent of the realities of invisible labor, is often taught to us. So how many days does it take to form a habit? Do you have a number that you can think of?
Well, everyone tells you it takes 30 days.
Yeah.
But I think it's longer than that.
It depends. I always get a number. I always get an answer. And that's the main point. Mm-hmm. 21, 28, 30 days. Rarely I get 100 days.
Okay.
Once I got 1,000 days.
Ooh.
Okay, there is no...
Dang, 3 years? There's no way I can do something for 3 years.
I know. That was like, oh boy. Oh boy. That's like 70 hard on repeat and, you know, no.
Yeah, no. No, not happening. No.
Okay, so the point is that there is a number and we all have one.
Okay.
And those are these methods that I've been taught. These are good men with great methods, but they're absent of our lived realities. And this is one example of that. This consistency is hinged on total perfection. You do the same habit in the exact same way day after day for that allotted number, and then poof, you have the habit. Well, what if on day 18, you start your period?
Yeah.
And you have less energy on top of all the other less energy they have. What if baseball season starts in the middle? That's always like the needle to my heart, you know, like in terms of structure around home and family. You know, what if someone's sick? What if you have a big work project due? What if you have been interrupted 1,000 times during your workout? This happened to me when I was postpartum most recently. I set out to do a easy, in quotes, simple 20-minute workout. I got interrupted over and over and over and over, and I finally pressed stop on my Apple Watch and stopped the workout 14 minutes in. Guess how long it said on my... I keep asking you, guess that you don't know this. The number on my watch, 2.5 hours. It took me 2.5 hours to do 14 minutes of my 20-minute workout. Right? And so a lot of us are working like the what's the point mentality, because we live it every day. So let's redefine consistency. We've already redefined self-care. Let's redefine consistency. Consistency is not rigid perfection. Consistency is doing your best most of the time over time. Your best is allowed to change. Your best is not perfection. Your best is truly intuitively what you truly can give that day. It may change day to day or season to season. Then we're also saying most of the time. Your target for consistency is more times than not. It's not 100% perfect, okay?
Yeah.
And the third qualifier for that is over time. You're playing the long game with habit formation, but it can also happen quicker than you think. It can happen quicker than even the 21-day marker that a lot of people give. And that's because when we know what consistency really is, then we also know that we are not only allowed to be flexible with our habits, the consistency we want comes from that flexibility. So we're going to apply this to how we form a habit, okay?
Okay.
Oftentimes we think to form a habit, Deanna, we think like, okay, I know the ideal habit I want. We design it. Okay. We think of the habit. So maybe we can do a specific example here. Like,
sure.
I am going
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Did you have an example?
I was going to say something about like, I mean, I think people always have habits they want to do about working out. But since this is a clutter-free, let's say I wanted to clutter for, you know, I wanted to clutter my whole house this month.
Yeah. So maybe you think I can do 30 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
So that seems realistic, right? Because you're like, just 30 minutes.
30 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems realistic.
Okay. But if you're not already doing 30 minutes most of the time, then it's still an ideal.
Right.
Okay. We do start with casting a vision of our ideals with our habits. We do need to know where we're headed and what we truly want and need that still matches our season. So ideals still need to match our season. And that's a perfect example of that. 30 minutes a day, that could it's not totally unrealistic. It could match my season. But again, if you're not already doing that, you also need a baseline version of that ideal. The baseline is the smallest and simplest version you can do on a less than ideal day. Okay, when your energy is low, your time is limited, your interruptions abound. And this could be like maybe you do a different time allotment. Maybe you say 5 minutes.
Maybe you just need to find one thing to declutter. Just find one thing.
Exactly.
Let's do that.
One thing.
Yeah.
And the thing about baselines is when nobody wants to believe in them because they want the ideals.
Sure.
But baselines are the flexible, it creates the flexibility you need to be consistent. Okay. Baselines provide that flexibility that make consistency possible. And because of that, baselines also build quite organically, because if you're being consistent, then you have the foundation to build. Not only do you build up to the ideals much faster than you think, your baselines build too. So maybe you spend a month and you say 30 minutes is the ideal, but if I can hit 5 minutes most of the days of the week, I'm still going to know I'm making a consistent habit. And that's great. And the next month, you're still continuing to work on decluttering. But now your baseline, hey, it's 10 minutes or it's 2 tasks. and you're gradually moving up. And some days, this is the other third part with baselines. Baselines create momentum. You find that even on your worst of day, you actually can do like 8 minutes, or you can do 1.5 tasks or 2 tasks. Like it just, you naturally have more momentum. It's the law of inertia, like a ball in motion stays in motion. This is what we do. A lot of habit formation is actually brain hacking. It's not a willpower thing. It's a brain behavior, brain design kind of thing. And so that's what baselines do. It can train our brains, one, to do the behaviors. Mm-hmm. It also trains us to kind of get into the action, and it creates a stability that we need to build. So that's one way we actually can be, we redefine consistency, we pursue consistency differently. And also because of that, we get the habit much faster than those 21 days. Even if you're sticking to the baseline, you're being consistent.
Right.
You are.
And yeah, you have the habit. Yeah, you're mm-hmm. already doing it. I think that's so fascinating because I think most of us think we don't have the habit until we're hitting that ideal. Excuse me. And then we think, well, if I haven't done it in the ideal way for those 30 days, then I don't have the habit. I'm not proving to myself that I did it. So I think that's fascinating that we can just shift it. Just have the ideal that you're shooting for, sure, but have your baseline and the thing you're absolutely going to do. And then on the days we don't hit those things, what if we don't hit our baseline?
That's where you're playing the more times than not game and the long-term game. This has been happening. Movement is my most important habit. It helps with my, you know, I've talked about how I've struggled with mental health quite a few times in my life. I still have depressive, anxious, you know, episodes, but I've thankfully not had like a very significant downturn in quite a while. But movement is one of those things for me. This week, we've had major gas line issues. I have holes all over the ceiling in my basement. I'm working on getting repair people here for all sorts of things. While we also have car troubles, we only have one car in our family because we both work from home and we lived in the Bay Area and only needed one car. So we've just somehow kept that here for the last 6 years in Utah. Nobody can believe we have one car here. And then on top of that, my 3-year-old has strep for the second time in 3 weeks. You know, so everything's been thrown up in the air on top of the normal May-cember things, you know.
Craziness.
So it's been a lot. And my movement has had to look different every single day this week. Normally I'm up at 5, which by the way, I do not like waking up early. There's no like morally superior time to wake up. It's just what has to happen for my season right now. And normally I wake up at 5 and I work out, and then I know exactly how I work out and I get it done and then I move on. It's been different every day this week. It's been a walk in the afternoon with my little guy. I'm trying to get him to sleep so he can try to heal. Or it's me working and like hauling my bark everywhere, like I told you, or working in my garden. Or some nights it's been I joined a community theater play. So some nights my exercise has been I'm like dancing at my rehearsal, which like old me would have been like, none of that counts. None of that counts. But now I know not only does it count, the whole point of the habits, and this is actually one of the bigger picture things we also need to redefine. We're redefining everything. Self-care consistently. Let's also go back to, we have to redefine habits. Their only job is to support us. That's it. They are in service for us. We are not in service to them. Habits are helpers. And so when I know that, then I can actually see, hey, that 20-minute walk actually gave me a lot of the support I need to be able to move through this. Hey, working in my garden was enough to give me that movement that I needed in the brain space, or dancing at my rehearsal. It's all given me the support I needed from that habit to begin with. So when we own that final piece to it, then we can not only choose the habits that are actually going to help us instead of falling for the litany of prescriptions that we have when it comes to habits, we can also choose to design the ideals that match our reality and what we want and need, and design the baselines that will help, and do that in ways that ultimately give us the whole point, which is the support that we need and deserve. And that all goes back to that self-care piece we talked about. Full circle.
Yeah. So good. Oh my gosh. I love that. I love the full circle moment. I love that we're just redefining everything. We're breaking it all down. Let's burn down the house.
Yeah. Let's burn it all down.
No, I think that's so interesting. You also talk about something that you call them sticky habits. can you walk us through what that means?
Sticky habits are habits where we are not only able to be consistent with them in the ways that we've defined, meaning they're sustainable, but they're the habits that consistently help us feel like ourselves. It goes back to the support piece. Okay. To me, that's what is missing in habit formation with women, especially. It's not just about getting more done in a day. It's about being yourself, because everything that invisible labor goes back to, who does it depend on? You being a person who can do that until things in the bigger picture change, and they will over time, they can. So that's what a sticky habit is to me. But there are some maxims that will help you create a habit that sticks. And some of them we've already covered. So I'm just going to repeat some of them to kind of help them land home. This is like if you looked at a Venn diagram, but there's four circles instead of two. And where they all cross in the middle is the sweet spot where you have a sticky habit. Your habit needs to be designed to be supportive, meaning one that's actually going to help you and that you want and need in your life, not about the shoulds or the prescriptions, okay? The second qualification to making a sticky habit is that it needs to be small, meaning it's not a routine.
Okay,
a lot of people think they're installing a habit and they're installing a routine. A routine is habits all strung together that support a specific task or a time of day, like skincare routine or morning routine or a meal prepping routine or day planning routine. Like sometimes there's multi steps to there. So it's actually just one step of a routine.
Okay.
The third qualifier is that it's simple. That's the baseline. So you do need to have, it doesn't have to stay simple, but the simple, you need a simple version of it in order to ensure it's sticky, because you need a net to fall back on those less than ideal days. That's what the baseline creates for you. It's this flexible net instead of habits being prisons, they're nets. Okay. And when you design them to be simple, that's where they're allowed to catch you, to be able to be consistent. So I said supportive, small, and simple. And the last is specific. Okay. And this one is we all kind of have that start Monday mentality. You know, we're like, okay, here's the habit I'm going to start when I start Monday. And also with that, we think like maybe we have a time of day, like I'll start Monday morning or afternoon or evening. But unless we have a lot of specificity attached to that, a habit's going to be really hard to be sustainable. In other words, sticky. And the way we can do that is we can follow a formula that I call the sticky habit formula. It's WTA. It's based on timing. When, then, after, WTA. When is an existing habit? You already have it. I'll come back to that. Then is your new habit. And often you think of the baseline version of it too, okay? And then after is reinforcement, positive reinforcement. So to make a habit really sticky, you need to know what your WTA is. When is the most confusing part? Because a lot of people come to me and they're like, I don't have habits. I'm like, do you wash your hands after you go to the bathroom?
Yes.
Do you start the dishwasher? Do you take your kids to school? Do you show up to work around a reasonable or like a same kind of time? Like there are habits in your life. You just don't know it because they are habits, because they require so little energy of you to remember. Yeah. That's what a true habit can look and feel like. It requires little energy, which is, by the way, another case for the baselines, because it requires very little energy. Okay. So think of the time of day that you want the habit and get really specific about what happens during that time of day that is something you tend to already do or have in place. That is your when. So maybe if you want to do that whole organization decluttering thing, maybe decide, okay, I want to declutter. Instead of saying I'm going to start Monday and decluttering 30 minutes a day, you say, I'm going to declutter, the most controllable time of day I've got are actually in the early afternoon, maybe when the kids are napping, or maybe you're saying early afternoon before my teens come home. It could be that. Or maybe after they go to bed or before I go to work, like in the morning or during my lunch break. So you decide the time of day. But let's say they say early afternoon. Then I want you to think of, well, what tends to happen in the early afternoon? And you at first are going to be like, nothing happens. And they're like, no, really think it through. Things happen during that time. Let's say this person eats lunch. She at least eats lunch. If some days it's like a granola bar or the leftovers on her kids' plates, but she usually eats something midday. Well, how do you know you're done eating? Well, I put my plate in the sink. Okay, great. That's your when. When I put my plate in the sink, then I'll declutter. And in your head, you think of the either 30 minutes or I've got my 5 minute or maybe something in between. But I know I've got my high point and I've got my low point of what habit I'm going to do. Then when you do it, this is when the after comes in. Just like you train a toddler to use the potty by doing stickers and prizes and M&Ms. Remember, habit formation is a brain thing. Mm-hmm. You've got to train your brain. That's where the specificity helps, because your brain is trained to attach a new habit to existing habits. It's habit stacking. It helps you have to use less energy to remember the habit. But after you lay it on thick, you can have a literal reward. You can have, you can give yourself M&Ms or fill out like a sticker chart, like a habit tracker. I've had women who do beads in a jar. It can be a literal reward, like a piece of chocolate or watching a YouTube video that you love. It can be calling a friend or blasting a song. It can be like giving yourself a hug or a pat on the back. But I find the most simple and effective form of reinforcement is through identity. By saying to yourself, this is who I am. See, I did it. Or like, good job. This is who you are. Like something like that, that seems so dumb and foreign, but truly trains our brain to love that feeling, to love the thing, the activity that was attached to it, and to seek it out more because it feels good. And gradually your A can drop away, which is so nice. You're not going to always have to give yourself a high five after you do a habit. But some people do it every time. Like when they're done exercising, they say to themselves, good job.
Why
they
not?
They put their B in the jar. Yeah.
I mean, there's enough negative in the world. Why not give ourselves something positive?
Yeah. I'm a big fan I suck on a piece of chocolate every time I have to call insurance to like get myself to do it, you know?
That's a good one.
I listen to audiobooks constantly because that helps me get my chores done. So use that to your benefit by training your brain to like a behavior and to like the effect of it too, in addition to the natural effects that come from it. So that was WTA, when then after. And that creates the specificity you need to hit that final circle and that whole habit, sticky habit matrix. So that way you do have a habit that is more likely to stick.
Oh, that's brilliant. I think it's really helpful to get different perspectives. I think you and I think very similarly, although I think we say it different ways. And I have not gone as deep. I haven't gone as deep on habits necessarily outside of what can we do within our home or how can we make those things easier. But I do love what you said about when they become a habit, you don't have to worry, like you don't worry about them, but you don't think about them as much. It doesn't take up the brain power. It allows you to have more energy and it's less decision fatigue and it's less just, yes, absolutely, less on the mental load, which is all coming back to. And I think that's so great. When it comes back to that. Well, Monica, this has been fantastic. I feel like I could talk to you all day. We're going to have you back and figure out how we can burn down the patriarchy without burning down our husbands and our marriages.
Yes.
Because I think that would be a fascinating topic to talk about, because I'm married to one.
Yeah, I'm happy
to
talk about that one.
Same. Honestly, sometimes he's more
of
a feminist than I am, you know?
Yeah.
But I just am like, I don't, it's a struggle. It's a struggle sometimes.
We're just living in different waters. That's just it. But I can always talk about that another time.
All right. Fantastic. Well, where can people find you? I know they're going to want to find out more and learn about progress and all of that. So tell them where they can find you.
Well, since you're already listening to a podcast, just search for About Progress in your podcast app. And I'd love for you to listen to a few episodes. I think it will really match what you need right now. I'm not just a habit person. We talk about everything personal development outside of perfectionism in ways that are deep and practical. And then for habits, I know I fire hosed everyone today, but that was probably like 5% of what I have to say on habits. And how they're formed. So especially for us as women, that's where my book comes in. It's coming out September of 2026, if you're listening to this later. And it's called Sticky Habits. It's a guide for women to help reclaim their happiness, ditch perfectionism, and create habits that last. And they can get pre-order bonuses right now if this is before September, and check out where to buy the book at stickyhabitsbook.com. And I would love for them to pre-order if they can.
Perfect. Well, this will come out right in the exact moment that they're going to be so excited about it, because it's going to come out, I think, in August or late July. So it's going to be perfect.
Sounds great.
You won't have to wait too long to get your copy, and yet you'll get all those bonuses, so you can dive right in. So that's fantastic. Well, yeah, that's awesome.
And I'll say too, like, if anyone does a book club, like, I'm happy to attend any virtual, like, I can attend virtually to any book club, as many as I can. You just email me if you're like, we're covering it in our book club. I'm happy to do that anywhere and anytime.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. I've never had anyone offer something like that on my podcast. So
that would be so cool to do that. Yeah, I would love to do it. So there's that extra little incentive, I guess.
Well, now I'm going to have to have a virtual book club just so we can do it. That just sounds so fun.
Hey, I'm down. I'm down.
Awesome. Well, my favorite way to end every episode is with three rapid fire questions. So we'll keep these nice and short. Number one is, what does clutter-free mean to you?
Calm. I know that you've probably had every guest answer that, but it just comes down to that for me. That's the whole point. I just feel calmer.
I love that. You'd be surprised, actually. That's not, I mean, it's probably a common answer, but I don't get that all the time. So,
okay. I wondered.
And then number two, what is something that is making you happy right now or in this season of life?
Well, I mentioned both of them, actually, gardening and being in my community play right now, which is my first time performing in 22 years.
That is so fun.
So they're my hobbies, really.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Can I ask what play you're doing?
Fiddler on the Roof. Ooh, and I was originally almost cast as the middle-aged mom, but then the fiddler guy is quite old. He's really good. He's really good. But they made me the dead zombie from a Sarah lady instead. So I get to like cackle and scream and try to breathe. So it's been interesting.
But fun, right? Like something totally different, right?
Fun and equal parts challenging. It's been both. But overall, I'm really glad I'm doing it. So yeah, that's
very cool. Very cool. All right. And the third one, what is something you want listeners to take away from today's conversation?
That they can change. I think that's one of our biggest fears behind almost everything that matters to us and the desires we have to improve in those areas is this fear that we cannot change. And you absolutely can. Everyone can change.
That's so perfect. Perfect way to end it. I love that so much. All right, Monica, thank you so much.
I really enjoyed my time with you. Thank you for giving me this space and for lending your community's ear to what I had to say today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm sure they're going to love it. That I'm already trying out this week. Well, did I tell ya or did I tell you? I knew you were going to like this conversation. The thing staying with me the most is the moment Monica said, perfectionism is misplacement of identity. Oh, I mean, that landed. And you probably saw it on my face if you're watching this on YouTube. But so many of us have built our worth on what we've gotten done. And then we wonder why we feel hollow when we finally cross that thing off the to-do list or we cross the finish line. Because so much of ourselves is tied up in our productivity and in what we do and not who we are. And then on the flip side, when you talked about underachieving perfectionism, where we just stay safe in the nothing because trying feels too risky or we've tried before and failed. And so now we're just like, I don't want to again. I saw myself in both of those. And I bet a lot of you did too. The other piece I can't stop thinking about is that invisible labor research, 4 hours a day for women. 2 for men, 6 to 1 in India. Like, regardless of whether or not you have kids in the home, regardless of whether you work in or out of the home, and every habit book on the bestseller list was tested on lives that look nothing like ours, right? They're written by men, great men, maybe, probably. I don't know them, so I can't say for certain, but the fact that it's just a different perspective, as she called it, they're swimming in different water than we are. So the next time a habit doesn't stick, I want you to hear Monica's voice in your head saying, your reality is different. And that means you get to do habits differently too. So here's your quick win for the week. Pick one habit you want to build. Just one. I struggle with that too. I want to try all of them at the same time, but then I fail miserably. So let's just pick one and then we're going to run with it. Let's run it through Monica's WTA formula. Try it for this week and see what happens. And then don't forget, Sticky Habits comes out this September, and you can pre-order it right now at stickyhabitbooks.com to get her bonuses. And Monica also said something at the end of our chat that I can't stop thinking about. She offered to drop in to virtual book clubs that are reading her book. How cool is that? I mean, I think that's just that's such an amazing offer. So reach out to her if you are putting together or if you're in a virtual book club and you want to read her book. And then let me know if you want me to pull together a Wannabe Clutter-Free book club. Send me a DM on Wannabe Clutter-Free over at Instagram and let me know. All right. If enough of you raise your hands, I mean, maybe we'll make this happen. I don't know. It should be fun. Let's see. All right. If you love this conversation as much as I did, the very best thing you can do is to share it. So text it to a friend who's been beating herself up about her habits. Leave a review. Tag me or Monica on Instagram so we can see your takeaways. All right. Next week, I'm back for a solo episode. Until then, be kind to yourself. You do not have to be perfect to make progress. You just have to start. All right. I'll see you next time.